This is ESPN Crick Info.
Srinath Sripat here. Before we start today, a couple of updates from us at ESPN Crick Info. The Vitality T20 Blast in England gets underway this week, and there's a host of episodes coming your way throughout the tournament, hosted by Dan Norcross of Test Match Sofa fame, who's now with BBC's Test Match Special, and he's among the most recognizable voices in the English game. He'll be joined by writers, insiders, analysts, and potentially players from the Blast over the next 10 weeks, so that's a whole lot of episodes coming your way on Talking T20. And remember, you can now listen to all our episodes by subscribing on iTunes, Pocket Cast, Stitcher, or wherever else you get your podcast from. Just stick in the RSS feed URL and click subscribe, or just key in Talking T20 on the search bar on your podcasting channel. Now that's out of the way, onwards to our latest episode. What does it take to run a global sporting franchise all year round? And how do think tanks spend the best part of the year trying to build the perfect T20 side? And how do you build a fan base from scratch and then grow and nurture it? All of those and many other questions on our mind and yours as well. Pleased to say that we have with us somebody who is best placed to answer them. Former Madras University batting all-rounder who went on to become a big name during an illustrious career in the American insurance industry. And most familiarly for all of us, in case you're wondering, is now running arguably cricket's largest and most expansive global T20 franchise. Venki Mysore, CEO and MD of Knight Riders, a man who wears multiple hats, also heading Red Chillies Entertainment in India. Pleased to have you on Talking T20.
Thank you very much. Pleased to be here.
Great. And our friend Gaurav Sundaraman, who himself has had a lengthy stint with IPL franchises as an analyst and auction table strategizer. He's now a senior stats analyst. He's back with us once again after a week's hiatus. Gaurav, welcome back.
Good to be back here, Srinath.
Great. I think we will just get started quickly on various aspects. There's lots to talk about. Firstly, the business of running a franchise, how do you plan for an auction and so on. Venki, I'll start with you. We are more than a month since the IPL ended for the 2018 season, and unlike pretty much everyone else in the field, you have another tournament coming up, the Caribbean Premier League with Trinbago Knight Riders. Two questions. How did you spend these 10 months when you only had the Kolkata franchise, and what's changed for you now?
Good question. And initially, it used to be a bit of a tongue-in-cheek remark when people used to ask me the same thing and say, what do you do for the remaining 10 months? And I used to say that I have the luxury of taking an extended vacation and then come back for the next edition of IPL. But jokes aside, I think, frankly, even when I started, now I can't believe it's been 8 seasons. I've completed 8 seasons with KKR. I came into the 4th season. But I think one of the questions we asked ourselves was, you know, what do we want to build? Do we want to build a franchise, or do we want to sort of run it like basically an event management company? Because what I mean by that is when you run it like an event, everything is focused on the event, which is the IPL. And so you cobble teams together and they come together and we put the show on, and after that everyone disperses and goes their way. But when you build a franchise, what you're thinking about is, you know, how do I build my brand? How do I build my fan base? And how do I grow this into a business that I can somehow keep active and create marketing and activation programs that can be relevant and appropriate around the year, which can contribute to the growth of the brand as well as the growth of the fan base? So we spent a lot of time doing those types of things before we got into acquiring other assets, Srinath, like you put it about Trinbago Knight Riders and all that. But so we invested a lot of time and resources to create a team and an infrastructure that would allow us to effectively build a franchise.
Gaurav, it's something that we keep discussing. We keep talking about how there's a lot of interest for the IPL over those 2-3 months, the preview weeks and the weeks after it. But it's really interesting, isn't it, to hear how you build a brand from scratch typically. I mean, it's a new tournament, and how a franchise has a 365-day strategy. You had a couple of questions for Venki on this front.
Venki, you've been played a big role in KKR's growth, and one thing you used to always say is the fans are the most important element for brand KKR. I've actually worked with a couple of franchises, and one challenge all of them seem to have is how do you plan a 365-day strategy? A lot of interest is there, maybe with the auction time, and then maybe April, May, and leading up to the IPL. But say a June to December, how do you keep the fans engaged, and do you have any activities planned during this time?
Well, and you're right. I mean, that's one of the bigger challenges for a franchise, given that there is a compact time frame within which the tournament occurs. But you know, the way we sort of addressed this was to sort of look at activities that would be meaningful to our quote-unquote fans. You know? And I say quote-unquote because I'll come back to our own definition of a fan and a spectator or someone who's coming there to get entertained. But nevertheless, I think the idea was to sort of keep the brand alive and multiple ways. You know, one is through associations that we have with other brands who are our sponsors. You know, we have brainstormed and we continue to do that and we create activities. You know, for example, if you look at the group of brands that who associate with us as KKR, quite a few of them, very consciously, we have gone after Kolkata-based brands. And there are lots of activities that we create there. For example, one of them being Durga Puja. So during that time, we do a lot of activity with the brands to continue the activation of what was started during IPL and, you know, before it sort of tapers off, there's a new campaign that they start and we are part of it. Our players have been very cooperative, you know, within reason in terms of given their commitments. So we go out there, we work through that. The ABP group, for example, is another partner. We have a lot of interesting campaigns that run with them, you know, using the KKR ABP association or a KKR and a Green Ply association or a KKR and a Lux Cozy association, etc. These are all Kolkata-based brands. We work through them. And what we also do is we're big on content, creation of that. Because end of the day, that's something that it's been proven over and over again that, you know, fans are very interested in the freshness, in how topical content can be. So, you know, we've created a content vertical where we have a content head who is constantly ideating and coming up with interesting concepts and ideas and ways in which the fans can engage. And there are gratification also that we build in for that. And so when you're continuously doing some of these things and someone is waking up every day thinking about ways in which we can keep the brand alive, it tends to happen. Of course, over the last 3, 4, 5 years, it's been helpful to us that we have also acquired another asset, which is, as Srinath alluded earlier, you know, TKR or Trinbago Knight Riders, as we call it, in the CPL. So that creates another window. That happens in August, September. And last year, as you might recall, we had also acquired a franchise in South Africa in the league to be launched. I mean, they've run into some teething issues, and I think they're trying to sort it out. But we had acquired the Cape Town franchise, so had that tournament kicked off last year, that would have happened in November, December. So you can see the idea behind it on how we can progress from one to the other to the other, and in a time frame that actually matches. So you run IPL in April, May, then you run CPL in August, September, then you go to the Global League in November, December, and who knows, you know, we might acquire one more asset sometime in Jan, Feb type, and then it just sort of becomes a full 360 activity with everything else that I was mentioning.
Yeah, the future itself is particularly interesting, and it's a fairly novel concept in cricket. Franchises really haven't expanded outside their main markets or their home markets. Couple of questions on Trinbago and in general the expansion strategy. These are all fairly different markets. We're talking the Caribbean, we're talking the US, and we're talking South Africa. India and these markets are completely different. So what was the plan behind acquiring these franchises? Is it just to build a stickiness for the Knight Riders brand, or is it just to engage with fans from around the globe? What's the thought process that you had while going about this?
See, I think the bigger vision that you know, I'd sort of shared with our owners who were completely aligned to it was the idea of expanding our brand and expanding our fan base in various different parts of the world. So much so that, you know, without overstretching it, one could say that we have truly become a global type of a franchise. You know, having said that, you know, my interest was to sort of see whether I could continue to interest or at least attract the brands that are associated with us for KKR and IPL. Can the same brands be associated with us in other leagues, like, you know, in the CPL or in Global League or wherever else we go? So much so the pitch was to the Indian brands to basically say, listen, I mean, wherever there is a Knight Rider jersey being worn by whoever plays for any Knight Rider franchise, I'd like to see your brand in the front of the jersey. So that helps in terms of activation. Now, the standard response always was, well, that's great, we're happy to do that, but we are not in that market. You know, a Nokia may not be selling in the Caribbean market, for example, and so on and so forth. We do play a couple of games during CPL in the U.S. Now, is that a market that we are targeting? Frankly, the market that I was targeting, and I was trying to create another window for them, was really the Indian market. To say, listen, it's not about the market where we are going to be playing. It's actually about the viewership that we will generate for that particular content and that particular league through the broadcaster and through the streaming partner that will happen back in India. So my intent was really to say, I want to create one more window. Maybe I want to create two more windows or three more windows over and above what IPL offers you for you to be able to activate and, you know, maintain continuity in the kind of marketing and activation programs that you have. And so that was really the pitch. So I said, you know, I want to see how we can increase Indian viewership of CPL, for example. And to give you a quick metric, this was shared by the broadcaster. I mean, we have been there. This will be our fourth year going in. So we went in 2015. So just before we went in, the Indian viewership of CPL was about 22 million on television. But last year, after 3 years of our association there, that number has gone in excess of 100 million. So there's a fivefold increase. And the broadcaster was very happy to, at that time, you know, it has all along been Sony, and they were very happy to associate with us because they felt that they had a hook to make it relevant for the Indian market. I mean, in the absence of Indian players playing in outside leagues, it is a challenge for them to say, how do I make it relevant for Indian audiences? And because, the, you know, we as KKR, or call it Knight Riders, the mother brand, were involved, they sort of saw it as an opportunity to create hooks. And, you know, we also socialized the league and the program quite extensively because of our following here. I mean, all our platforms put together, social media, we are in excess of perhaps 25 million. So we were socializing the idea that Knight Riders are playing there. It might be in a different country, different venue, etc. Queen's Park Oval, where we're playing as Trinbago Knight Riders. But, you know, as the Kolkata Knight Rider fan, would you continue to support us there? And, you know, that gained a lot of traction. So the whole vision around expanding it is to get our brand, the salience of the brand, to keep growing and create those partnerships and also to keep our fan base growing. But the process and the methodology that we used was really to rely more on the Indian viewership and the Indian marketplace as opposed to necessarily the local. The local did happen and does happen, and it's been fantastic. It's been a great experience there. But this has been an amazingly successful initiative that we took, which has paid off for us.
Gaurav, you've been part of backroom staff in both the IPL and in the CPL through your time. These seem to be astounding numbers. 22 million to 100 million is nearly a fivefold increase. The question that I wanted to ask you, and then you can then ask Vinky about it, is that do we see backroom staff kind of moving between a franchise that has presence across the globe? Is that one of the core benefits that you see happening with more and more teams around the world, leave alone Knight Riders? But as teams expand around the globe, is this something that is going to change?
Yes, definitely. And continuity helps. And we've seen that even with teams, we've seen that with support staff, we've seen that with franchises across the leagues, that sometimes continuity, having the same set of people, everybody is comfortable, the business operations become easier, even performance on the field becomes a lot easy. So, yes, I see that happening. In fact, like you mentioned, apart from KKR, yes, we saw Delhi trying their luck at Global T20, but we've not seen the other franchises do this yet. And in fact, it's very surprising that not many have gone the way Venky has gone. So, I wouldn't be surprised if we see a change slowly with so many leagues coming up and England opening up their league in 2020. I think it's going to we're going to see that more often. And just building on Venky's point about so much viewership in broadcast and digital, I wanted to ask him, can you draw a parallel between the evolution of IPL and the evolution of digital media? Today, I think most of us are always on our mobile devices rather than on TV. We catch up on highlights. We're able to watch cricket anywhere in the globe from any location. And can you kind of, do you see a parallel between how IPL has evolved and how digital media has evolved?
Absolutely. I mean, if we refer to digital media as people consuming content, you know, where they want, how they want, when they want type of thing, using smartphones or computers or any mobile devices, it's had a massive impact, no doubt about it. And I think it's also reflected in the fact that in the recent, you know, media type of deals, deal that took place in the context of IPL, you saw some of the players who we never thought would be really serious participants in something like this coming in and putting bids there and taking bets which were quite astounding, actually. So I think basically what is happening is that, you know, clearly with bandwidth and mobility from a technology perspective dramatically changing and expanding and improving, as well as the penetration of I should say first the usage of cell phones and the penetration of smartphones and the way device manufacturers have made it so much more affordable, that today, because of the affordability of a smartphone and mobility and bandwidth, people are able to consume content at their convenience. So I think that's the way it's going forward. And we have seen this, actually, to digress a little bit, when I wear my other hat of Red Chilies, we see this in the content business there as well. Very clearly, the kind of the platforms that have emerged, like the Netflixes of the world, the Amazons of the world, the Jios of the world, they're all hungry for content. So we consider ourselves, coming back to KKR or Red Chilies or whoever, we consider ourselves to be in the content business. So effectively, what we're doing is we are creating content. And there are platforms today who are very, very hungry for it. And so it is something that is that's really working out very well from a business model standpoint. And I expect this to continue to grow. So the stats will come out shortly. But from everything I've been hearing anecdotally, the kind of consumption of IPL that happened this past season on digital platforms was had shown a significant increase, so which is not surprising, but yes, that's there's definite correlation there, and I think it'll continue to become bigger if anything.
Quinky, as a franchise owner, do you see the start of Indian players playing in overseas leagues actually helping your brand even more, and say a guy like maybe Ishan Jaggi or someone who's not got good game time in the IPL, but he can go and play for your franchise in the West Indies. So do you see that? Are you a person who vouches for this concept? I know the board's not too much for this, but would you want to see that? That's only going to help your business even more.
See, I do appreciate the fact, because I've had several conversations around this subject, and it is important to understand the other side of the perspective, which is that by allowing players to go out, where do you draw the line? I mean, recently ICC has just, there's some news that's come out which says that they intend to restrict it to 3 T20 tournaments for every player. But I think the balance that needs to be achieved is that how does one also make sure that the windowing is appropriate and is optimal, so that the domestic cricket season doesn't get affected in any shape or form. And after all, huge amounts of investments have gone in by the boards to build infrastructure, to build that system through which the cricketers come through. And we have all benefited from that, because basically we are going to the auction and or trade or whatever and picking up our teams respectively. So While I understand that side of it, I think a solution has to be found somewhere, because I do think that it can be huge. I mean, see what IPL has done for Indian cricket. I think it's played a huge role in showcasing talent who otherwise would not have had enough opportunities. And next thing you know, they're staking a claim for the national team. And I think the rest of the world is also noticing that and they're seeing that. So there's a huge benefit to that. But in the process, are we also missing out a little bit? Because there are probably at a minimum 1, 2, 3 players who are sitting on the bench of every franchise, 8 franchises times, let's say, 3. There must be at least 20 to 25 players who are sitting who are capable of doing very well, and if they were given an opportunity, but you know, obviously they're not getting enough chances. So if those types of players are allowed, emerging players or people who we think have immense potential to go out and play, they might play one tournament there, and suddenly you discover someone and say, wow, and that's for the, that'll benefit Indian cricket in the short and medium and the long run. So I'm definitely someone who advocates that. I do understand the challenges of doing it. So one needs to just sit down and find an appropriate solution to be able to do that.
Okay, I'm just going to focus a little more on one of the main points you made about the IPL being a breeding ground of sorts for young Indian players. You went into IPL 2018 with possibly the smallest squad in the field, with a lot of Indian youngsters, a lot of under-19 guys, a lot of guys who performed like Nitish Rana, who succeeded in the IPL. You picked Prasidh Krishna out of nowhere when your other under-19 youngster, Kamlesh Nagarkoti, got injured. Do you see a tournament where instant results are everything, a tournament which lasts for 8 weeks and you just need to keep winning to stay in the hunt? How much of a room do you see that the IPL offers for breeding of young Indian players in the fold? Because franchises over the years have had mixed results.
See, I think it is a lot of the onus is on the franchises to come up with creative ways by which we can continue to develop our players. And we hope to be announcing something as an interesting initiative that we are starting, which is designed to help our players to improve their skills and improve their fitness, and create a structure around the year where they can actually take advantage of the resources and the facilities that we would offer as KKR or Knight Riders. So I think there is an opportunity there. IPL is by itself is not restricting any of us from doing that type of thing. And when you think of the broader organization like IPL and BCCI, obviously they have their domestic structures, their state associations and all the infrastructure that's created around it and the ecosystem of cricket which produces the players. But from our perspective, specific to T20, the type of skills that we want, and we have players now who are contracted for a minimum period of 3 years. So how do we ensure that we're just not reassembling 1 week before the next season starts and then trying to figure out how everyone has done? Obviously everyone keeps track of what their players are doing, but proactively, what can we do to help our players improve as cricketers? So those are opportunities that each franchise has, and we are moving in a certain direction with that, which is consistent with some of our longer term franchise model type of a goal. And we're quite optimistic that that'll produce good results for us, because if each cricketer, we're able to help them in some shape or form to improve by 5%, and I'm just picking a number there, but when they come back for the next season, then the connectedness to the franchise also is strong, because they see that we're doing things to help them in the off season, but at the same time, hopefully they come back as better cricketers. So absolutely, I think that has to be an integral part of how we build our franchise.
Yeah, you spoke about continuity and bringing in the right kind of talent. I think you've been able to manage it successfully over the 7-8 years you've been part of. Gaurav, again, as somebody who's sat on auction tables as part of a franchise, you've been with RCB, I think, in 2015, if I'm not wrong. This sort of strategy, the continuity and the constant sets of values that they have in terms of not overspending on players, in terms of getting in the adequate number of young players and breeding them and giving them opportunities to grow, this kind of varies across franchises, isn't it? It's very difficult to keep it constant over a long period of time like KKR have.
Yes, it's a very interesting conundrum, actually. If you see, different franchises work differently. There are some franchises who go for the youngsters. There are some franchises who think for a particular year. If you saw CSK this year, they've actually picked a team which can maybe perform only in 2018, and they have done it exceptionally well. But there are different strategies, Venky. I'm sure you're the best person to comment on that. So for a team like KKR, this year you went heavily on Chris Lynn, Mitchell Starc. You had four or five really strong overseas players whom you maybe put all your eggs on, and they all came out with flying colors. Yes, Mitchell Starc didn't play, but his team would have just, his presence would have just made your team even more deadly. But so during an auction scenario, when do you like stop bidding? When do you decide that yes, Lynn is not worth more than say 9 or 10 crores? So let's look at the next possible option. Or how do you cover up Russell's absence? Do you pick two players which are equivalent to Russell, or do you just pick another all-rounder who you think can fill his shoes?
So, you know, it's challenging, isn't it? Because just the randomness of the auction and the limitation of the salary cap, one has to sort of really, I mean, when I first came in, I started asking people, you know, how would you go about it? And I had sort of, I was trying to formulate my own thoughts, but I think there's a larger picture that we have always tried to fall back on. One is to say, what's the culture of the franchise? And the team has to reflect that. You know? And so what are we trying to do? So the first thing we said to ourselves was, it's all about team KKR. So the first philosophy, and you put the stake in the ground and say the team is bigger than any individual, and therefore it's all about team KKR. And just the nature of IPL and the regulation says that every 3 years there's a big auction. So in theory, you could be changing your team substantially every 3 years. I mean, the percentages vary based on retention rules and all that. So, you know, if it is sort of linked to one player, two player, three players, and the brand and the visibility of it and the fan following and all that, if it becomes very dependent on a handful of players, then, you know, you are in some potential trouble there if you can't get those players back. So first thing we said was it's all about team KKR. So the brand, I mean, today if you see, I think people will find it hard to say, okay, who's my superstar in the team? You know? So we said, you know, we really didn't go after superstars, if you will. So we really said, okay, you know, that's the philosophy of the team. The team comes first. But now when we assemble the team, we said what we really have to do is to identify, I mean, sat with the think tank and the coaching staff, and I always get involved with strategy and facilitating that. And I said, listen, I mean, if we're building a team, can we build teams only with skills and not with names of players? You know? So what are the skill sets that you need, keeping in mind conditions, keeping in mind the combination that you want to put together? So what sort of skills are you looking for? And when you look at those types of skills, what you realize is that for certain types of skills, you may have many options. For certain types of skills, you'll have limited options. So your entire money management and your salary cap management, sort of, you know, you dovetail that to that strategy and say wherever you feel that you can get those types of skills, you know, one way or the other, then you're not trying to spend too much money on that type of player. So that can only happen when you say, I'm not going by a name, I'm only going specific to skills. So that's been sort of our outlook, and fortunately it has worked for us so far. In the 2011 auction, 2014 auction, 2018 auction just concluded, we've followed the same strategy and philosophy, and I must say that if results are to go by, I think the strategy has been vindicated.
Yeah, absolutely. I think which brings us nicely to the point of scouting networks, because you spoke about non-superstar skill sets. I think one of the most transformative buys for KKR, if I may call that, is that of Sunil Narain back in 2011-12 when he was virtually unknown to the world. What's the story behind getting those sorts of players who are not really known to Indian audiences or haven't really shown at the international level, but you kind of placing a bet on them and then reaping rewards later on?
See, I think, you know, there are several passionate people within the system. You know, our analyst, Srikant, being one of them. You know, our coaches, and we have scouts practically everywhere in the domestic circuit, like all teams do, you know, overseas here and everything else. So we do have a pretty good handle on the kind of talent that's available and the kind of talent that's emerging. But I think probably what is slightly different about us is that we do, along with that, have the courage to take that bet and say, hey, we're going to do that. You know? I mean, just like we picked three under-19 boys this year, you know, Shubman Gill, Mavi as well as Shiva Mavi as well as Kamlesh Nagarkoti, and then subsequently Prasid Krishna as well. So it takes a certain amount of conviction and courage to say, you know, we're going to place the bets on the youngsters. In earlier years, you know, we'd pick Shakib, and Shakib, someone said, Shakib, you know, and said, well, he was the number one ICC-rated player at that particular point in time in white ball cricket. Yeah. And he came and did a fantastic job for us. And his last year, he did a really good job for Sunrisers as well. We had picked someone like Ryan Tendeshkada, you know, and commentators had difficulty pronouncing his name also. But we had tracked him down, and he was one of the very promising, and he was always very, very effective with the bat and gave you a little bit with the ball, was an outstanding fielder, terrific team man. And we didn't have to spend too much to get these types of players and talent. And when it comes off, you know, you look good. If it doesn't, and then you sort of, you know, take it on your chin, move on and do some fine-tuning and continue. So I would say that those are the things that have actually helped us in assembling teams that have performed. And, you know, every year you start off by saying that the goal is to make the playoffs, and we've been fortunate that we've practically done it every year. So, you know, and then if you're lucky enough, you move on and you win championships. And we were fortunate to do that twice here. And we're also very happy that we won two championships in the Caribbean in 2015 and 2017. So there are certain things, obviously, that's working. And one quick point I would also make, I think you alluded to that, is about the support staff. And we try to, it's more a cultural thing that we try to maintain and develop in each, whichever franchise that we've acquired and that we are running. So there's a lot of commonality in the support staff. That's something that we can control. So the coaches, the analysts, and the physio, trainer. So we try to keep the same group. And we've also, although the system in the Caribbean is a little different, it's the draft system versus the auction here, but still we have at least at every season, we have had three, perhaps four players who are common to both KKR and TKR. And that helps also. So between the support staff and the players, they're able to quickly establish, you know, and sort of replicate our culture of how we run the franchise. And the we sort of, I mean, a lot of people use this terminology, but we do genuinely believe that we have a really good family type of atmosphere. And I think players also recognize that, who are part of it. And it helps to have some of these commonalities for us to be able to go and build elsewhere as well.
Yeah, as somebody who handles a draft and an auction every other year, there is a lot of criticism about the auction system not entirely being fair. Do you see that as a valid point, or do you see that as each league has its own?
Yeah, no, I think the time has come. Frankly, there have been some conversations that have gone on offline between franchisees, and a couple of us have been talking about this for a while, saying that I think the time has come where, you know, it may be appropriate to move away from the auction system, because, you know, it was necessary to maintain a level playing field, and also everybody was kind of learning on the fly. But I think after completing 11 seasons, I think all franchises have figured out, you know, how to build and run a franchise. I mean, each one has their own style, so that's different. But I think to be able to maintain continuity and connect with the city, connect with the fans, I think it's important to get away from the big auction idea where everybody goes back into the auction and then you try to rebuild. Rather than that, you know, having some kind of a combination of a draft system and trading and even a loan system, which was introduced this year, all of those will help in empowering the franchises to fine-tune and build their teams, at the same time maintain continuity.
So talking about continuity, Venki, what's your take on the lack of Indian coaches, in especially the IPL, considering it's Indian Premier League, there's so many domestic players, somehow we've seen more coaches from other countries doing well as well as dominating the support staff of most places. Do you see that changing, or is it strategic in nature, or is it just lack of good resources?
See, I think it's just a life cycle of the number of people who sort of qualify to get into the support staff and coaching staff. But I do see that changing, and you know, certainly I think there are some really good coaches who are emerging. I think IPL has done that, and I don't know whether people took it very seriously in the initial stages, but with all the state associations and the number of state coaches, and you know, with NCAs and Academy right now, and everything that BCCI is doing to help, and individually people taking their own initiative, they see that this is a career that can be fairly satisfying and also lucrative. So, and I've known of several Indian potential coaching candidates who have taken the initiative to go abroad and hone their skills and work through certain types of systems to come back. So I definitely see that that trend will shift more towards Indian coaches, I feel, because there are a lot of very competent people who are coming through the system.
Right. Fascinating inputs there from Venki Mysore, and it's great to hear from somebody who has been running a franchise on and off the field in terms of an auction and taking care of the business. It's a very rare thing in cricket to have a franchise expand across markets and around the globe. So thank you very much, Venki Mysore, for joining us on Talking T20. Thanks a lot for your time, for taking your time out and coming on the show today.
My pleasure, Sinat. Thank you. I enjoyed it. Gaurav, thanks very much. And it was fun talking through this. Thank you again.
This is ESPN Crick Info.